Resurrection, I view the now as eternity. This is the University of Healing with our Easter Seminar, Lecture 4. Resurrection, I view the now as eternity. Eternity is the isness without definition or definiteness. The magic of true life is living it fully now. Eternity is something that's hard for us to define because you cannot define it. Eternity is forever. Resurrection is now. I view the now as eternity, and I view the resurrection as now. And what is the resurrection? How do we look at the resurrection? Do we look at the resurrection as our finding out who we really are? Our waking up to the reality of who we really are? Do we become awake to our ideal and our direction and our goal? Now, we've been talking about what happens. Now, Sylvia is telling us that she has seen the light. A lot of people like to see the light and understand what's going on in the world. But Sylvia said she has seen the light. Now, what does it mean to see the light? The Buddha, he saw the light. Now, is Sylvia in the same classification as the Buddha seeing the light? Exactly. Everyone is in that same classification when they see the light. However, what benefit do you have from seeing the light, if benefit is the right word to use? Do you have the benefit of being aware of your inner self? Do you have the benefit of being aware of the divine that is within you? Are you tuned in to who you really are? If that's the case, that's pretty nice. If you're not tuned into it, if you are doing it like a person on the roller coaster, you get whee, that thrill going down, and then as soon as you hit the bottom, boom, you're over that thrill. Now, I think actually people who experience illumination, who experience this resurrection illumination, are much like the roller coaster ride. We are all set for it. We are ready for the thrill of it. But Sylvia, did you put out your hands to hold on to the thrill as you were going down so that you would carry it with you and remain it, keep it yours and remain to keep it as yours? No, we don't do that. We don't do that because the thrill of the illumination is so great. And many people have it. Many people have this illumination. And what does this mean? What does it mean? How do we retain that awareness that we had during the illumination when we felt so wonderful, so uplifted, so thrilled, so pleased inside of ourselves? How do we retain that? Well, Sylvia didn't know this word at that time, nor does anyone else at that time. And the word is called now, living in the now. If Sylvia had just lived in the now, she would have never come back from it. She would have been thrilled from it. Now, let's play with that for a moment. If you are thrilled with it, if you live in the now, if you never come back from that awareness, what do you do? What do you do when you enter into this state of illumination, this state of wonderful bliss, the state of nirvana? When you enter into that state, what do you do? Well, what?
You are.
You are it. Yeah, it's an is. You are it. But the thing is, why do you lose it? Why is it that you drift away from it? Why is it that it is something elusive and hard to hold on to? Well, the reason it's elusive and hard to hold on to is because we try to capture it with our relative self. We try to capture it with our ability as we understand who we are. instead of capturing it from that never land aspect of just plain belief. Now, if Sylvia and anyone else, but if Sylvia had been able to just say, I believe, I have it, I believe it, I have it, then she might well have remained in that state of consciousness. But because we come back, because we are human, because we are sensitive, because we're aware of our physical bodies and our mental bodies, we step away from it. We step away from it. Now, for instance, we can go to the story of Jesus. Jesus had his illumination, he had his resurrection, and he stepped forth from his tomb without anyone rolling away the stone. It was just poof, out of the way. And the remnants of his clothing were there, but he wasn't. And he was wearing, to all outward purposes, clothing. He was wearing radiant white clothing. He had a seamless robe before, but of course the guards took that away. And here he was, wearing this beautiful radiant clothing with a radiant consciousness and just a radiance about him. How many men do people meet in their lifetime in that consciousness, you know? Well, the people who met him could not conceive of him being so glorified. And so they immediately lowered him in their thinking to their own understanding. And because they lowered him in their own thinking to their own understanding, they did not rise up with him in that glory. If the disciples had immediately been able to recognize him for who he was, they too could have instantly been illumined. What did he say to the prisoner on the cross with him? He said, "Today art thou with me in paradise, for thou hast seen the truth." And the prisoner recognized the truth about Jesus. He saw his Christhood. He may have been terrible, but from the moment that he saw the truth, he no longer was that former person. He no longer had any of that former person's isness about him. He now was a new is, a risen is. He was a risen consciousness in the awareness of his divinity. Now, Jesus recognized that. And as Jesus was going through this experience, what was he doing? He was scanning the crowd. He was looking over all of those people who he had known as neighbors and as people from his community and his own family. And what did he see there? Did he see any glorified spirits? Did he see any beings who were glorious? All of them. All of them. He saw them all through his eyes of purity and Christ-likeness. You know what I mean? He saw them all that way. And because he saw them all that way, they could not see him. Because if they looked with their physical eyes, they only saw a man on the cross. But if they looked with their inner spiritual consciousness, with their divine self, what would they see? They would have seen the risen Christ. They would have seen that resurrected being. But again, the women who met Jesus as he came away from the tomb didn't even realize that he was something special. They may have, hey, you know, kind of a clean outfit he's got on there. He looks pretty nice, you know. Or when the disciples saw him in the upper room, why didn't they recognize him? Why did doubting Thomas say, "Hey, you haven't got any of the stigmata of Jesus, you know, you can't be him"? And how did doubting Thomas know that that was there? He never saw him with the nails out of his hand. He didn't even see him with the nails in his hand, if you remember. He was not there. He was nowhere around. So, the story has a lot of imagination in it, and it's very creative. But the thing is, the fact that he did this, the fact that he experienced this, is nice. And I say nice because you too can do that. You too can do that. Right now, you can be resurrected out of your present body, your present mind, your present spirit, your present world. You can be resurrected and be illumined in the Christ consciousness. The things that I do, ye shall do also, and greater things than these shall ye do. So you can be illumined, resurrected. However, do you want to be? Do you want to have that experience? If you have that experience, you will have nothing to complain about ever again. You will have nothing to desire ever again. You will be, and if I can use that word, you will be an is. You will be an is without any relative sensitivity. Now, when Jesus came back illumined, resurrected, did he have any need for anything? No. Did he have a need to see his disciples? No. Why did he see them? Because he was here as a teacher showing them the way, and he appeared before them, and they didn't recognize him. How many wonderful ascended teachers, if I can say that, how many wonderful ascended teachers have come back to their flock, have come back to their disciples, their followers, and not been recognized? Do you think they insist that their followers recognize them? No. Because if they did, their followers would do what? They'd crucify him again. No, they'd crucify him again, because he's trying to take the place of their former teacher, their former master, or, you know, their present master. And people don't like that. People don't like that. Humans don't like that. Now, it is very difficult for people to have this spiritual experience, because in this spiritual experience, all of the things that we hold dear, all of the things that we think are valuable and important in our life, are no longer valuable and important to us. All these things are gone with the wind. They are just completely gone from our awareness. Now, why are they gone from our awareness? They're gone from our awareness because of one simple thing. Because we want to remain human. We want to remain human. Let's look at Jesus speaking to the blind men. He says, "It is done. Now go and tell no one." It is done. Now go and tell no one. And they went out and told, and they lost their sight. God spoke to Adam and Eve and said, "Kids, this whole place is yours. Have a ball. But there's one tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat of that tree. Don't eat of that tree." He didn't say knowledge of good and evil. He said the apple tree. Let that apple tree alone. And that made it all the more enticing. But it shouldn't make it enticing if Adam and Eve were divine beings. But Adam and Eve were slowly becoming human beings, because they were responding and responding to and responding in a world which was a human world. They were thinking about a world where they had to pluck the fruit to eat it. They didn't just look at the fruit and they were already satisfied, you know? They didn't just think of themselves, "Let's see, I think I'll go over there and be there." Now, maybe they did. Maybe they did. Maybe they were like the Atlanteans in their advanced stage. And maybe they did just think their thought and they were there. I would rather think that they did. I would rather think that anyone who was supposedly as highly evolved as Adam and Eve were could do that. Now, it is a story. It is a story that could very well be true. And I believe that whatever things we can write up and say is true are true. We can say all sorts of things are true. People believe anything. And we believe it too. Now, when we want to enter into the resurrection, the resurrected consciousness, how do we do it? How do we look into it? Here we say, resurrection, I view the now as eternity. Eternity is the isness without definition and without definiteness. The magic of true life is living in the now. Okay? How do we do that? How do we fully live in the now? Do you have the ability to think your thoughts in the now, or do you think your thoughts combined with maybe 100 other thoughts at the moment you think them? I say, the sky is blue, and right away you define the word blue, meaning the color that it has, and you define the word blue as what the sky is, or perhaps a reflection in the ocean, or whatever else you want to say, and you right away come up with definitions for it. You right away want to come up with something that makes it understandable to your human mind. But can you say, not say the sky is blue, because that limits you there. Blue. What is the isness blue? You can't answer that. What is the isness water? You say H2O. But that's not true. Water may be a compound of H2O, but water is an essence. Water is an entity. Water is a something that quenches one's thirst. Water is something that rinses one's body. Water is moisture in the air, which allows the human body to exist. You see, what is water? Now, what is blue? Blue is more easily understood only as an is, which doesn't have any understanding at all, whereas water is not so easily understood as just a plain is. However, when we come to the consciousness that we can say the water is an is, and Sylvia is an is, and Ingeborg is an is, and Dorothea is an is, and Ellen is an is, and Rex, Button, Love, each are an is. Yeah, but Herb, that's so impersonal, that's so indefinite, you know. Yeah, if I said to you, bring me three is's, what kind of isness would you like? Dog isnesses, people isnesses, thing isnesses, you know, and that's true. But let me say this to you. The day that I can say to you, bring me three isnesses, and you know exactly the three isnesses that I have in mind, you will go and bring me the three isnesses. You understand?
Yes.
That's the day that you are in tune with your divine self. That's the day that you are resurrected. That's the day that you are illumined. You see, you don't have to have words. You don't have to have concepts. You don't have to have anything. If I say, bring me four isnesses, and so you bring me the four of you, I say, wonderful. All right, now bring me the three isnesses. So you bring me the three dogs, you know. Bring me the what have we sat together? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bring me the five isnesses. And that would be the last, wouldn't it? Okay. What are these things that we're doing? We are attempting to dehumanize who we are. And the more we dehumanize who we are, the more we spiritualize who we are, the more we are our resurrected self. When we can get ourselves down to the basics and the sub-basics and the sub-sub-basics to the is that we really are, then what is it? If I were to say to Ingeborg, Ingeborg, you are nothing but a bunch of atoms. And Ingeborg would say, well, that's true, but I'm sort of nicely distributed, aren't I? I put these atoms together in a very pleasant way, right? And I'm very happy with the atoms that I've constructed into the form that I am. And each of you are too. Each of you are happy with the way you constructed your atoms, because if you weren't happy, you'd reconstruct them. Because your atoms are as flexible and mobile and able to move around and readjust themselves as anything in the world can be. But we become accustomed to this. And this accustomedness that we have to seeing our bodies the way they are and seeing our thoughts the way they are, these are the limitations that keep us from expressing our resurrected self. To be our resurrected self in the now, we live in our ideal spirit, mind, and body. We live in our original purity and integrity. We live without anything. Now, on the computer, we have, what is that called? You return it to a former setting. In returning it to the former setting, the setting that you had when you brought the computer home 3 weeks ago, it was in good shape. And so you return to the day that you brought it home 3 weeks ago. That's wonderful. Okay, now, wouldn't it be glorious, and we do have it, wouldn't it be glorious if we could take our bodies and return to our original purity and integrity? Where in our body lifetime was our original purity and integrity in force? It was in force in the mind of the Creator. Now, you are supposed to have created yourself. So, theoretically, you can go back in your own mind, you are the Creator, and you can go back to your original purity and integrity, and you can be that original purity and integrity very nicely. Now, the question is, do you want to do that? Because if you do, all of these adventures that you've had over these years since you were expressing your original purity and integrity totally would disappear. Everything you have ever done between then and now would disappear. The only thing that would remain would be the programs that you use to function your life. And those are the troublemakers. The programs that you use to conduct your life, as I say, those are the troublemakers, because those are your habits. Those are your techniques for thinking. Those are your techniques for limitation. Now, if you were inside of the mind of, say, Bill Gates as a software creator, and you think in his Jenner, and you think in his method, in his way, what would happen to you? You would think some pretty important and wonderful thoughts. Now, if you were in the thought of an idiot, you would never begin to think those type of thoughts, because an idiot thinks different thoughts. He does not have his mind all together. Now, we don't have our minds all together either in a lot of different areas, because we are allowing ourselves to think many areas, many ways, which limit us. Now, if you say to your son, "Son, I want you to be a mathematician, but I must tell you right now, why must I tell you this, but I must tell you, why must I tell you this? I must tell you right now, your father is poor in mathematics. I have never been interested in mathematics. Your mother, your grandmother, your grandfather, your grandmother and grandfather on the other side were failures at mathematics. Everybody in our relationship is failures as mathematics." And the boy says to his mother, "Why should I go into mathematics?" "Son, you should go into mathematics because you love it." "Yeah, I do, but if we're all failures, you know, that's what I'm going to end up being too." "Oh, no, no, you'll be a success." "But, Mom, I will be what all of us have been, a failure." See, now, if Mom had shut her big mouth and not mentioned anything about the history of the family relative to mathematics, just take her son to mathematics activities, you know, how they have these special shows and they have these special programs for kids to encourage them in the field that they want to go into. And if the mother would say, you know, son, I'm so proud of you. No matter what mathematical problem I have, I can just mention it to you, and in a flash, you have the answer. You are a genius. You are a whiz. You are wonderful. You are mathematical. You are this. You are that. You are that. And what's the boy going to do? He is going to be very good. Not because he has had good training, but because he has prepared himself to receive. He has prepared himself to be aware. You take an autistic child, and that autistic child, by and large, and it happens in quite a number of them, they come up with some absolute genius quality within them. They don't know what the genius quality is, how to use it beneficially, but you give them, again, like mathematics, you give them some complex figures to multiply, add, subtract, and divide, and square root, and do all these things with. You give them some complex form, and they come up with the answer. Now, how can they do that? Well, in them, many areas are blocked, but that particular area is not blocked. How wonderful. How useless. But that particular area is not blocked. So, if an area can be not blocked, we would certainly do everything we can to learn how to unblock the areas within our own thinking so we can do those things. And science is going tiger on looking for ways to unblock the unconscious or the subconscious or whatever the terms they want to use for it. Now, we know how to unblock the subconscious. We know how to release all the genius that's within us, but we don't have an interest in doing it. And because we don't have an interest in doing it, we don't release it. If we ever had an interest in doing it, what would happen? We would be magnificent. We would be utterly magnificent. And that's why young people go to school. They had an article in the Business Week magazine last week, and the article showed a dozen of the young geniuses from 15, 18 years old to 27 years old, and they were all geniuses through high school. Super kids, doing super things. And then it said there were some 5,000 more that they were keeping track of these super kids and what they're doing, how they are unleashing their minds to accomplish great and wonderful things. Well, we have within us that ability too, but that ability is really not the terribly important thing. The terribly important thing is if we could be aware of that light within us, if we could be aware of that illumination within us, that revelation within us, you know, that attitude that we have of resurrection within us, of who and what we are. Jesus was resurrected from the man Jesus to the divine being that he was. The divine being that he was always there. But why didn't he always walk around with that illumined attitude? Why didn't he always walk around with that resurrected attitude? Because he went through the resurrection. Now, lets us realize we too can go through that resurrection experience if we wish. We can go through that resurrection experience and we can have that illumination that Jesus had. We can have the illumination that many others have. We have it sporadically. We have it temporarily. We have it just for a lark, you might say, but we can't hold on to it. We want to learn how to hold on to it. One of the ways that we learn how to hold on to it is to believe in ourselves. Believe in ourselves. Believe in ourselves. When we learn to believe in ourselves, we will open these doors just as though they had never been closed. We'll walk into our inner depth. We'll walk into our inner awareness. We'll walk into our inner beingness so beautifully, so fantastically, so joyously, that we will just be illumined. We'll be resurrected. I've had the school of the Master every so often, every number of years, and it usually lasted from 3 months to 6 months to a year. In fact, a school is going on right now. And these schools are very special. Let's say 50 people sign up for the school. And 50 people do everything that they're supposed to do in the school. They just are dedicated students. And 50 people graduate from the school, for which there's really no graduation, but they graduate from the school. And the 50 people do not know each other. They do not remember each other. They don't remember that each other had ever been there. They don't remember that they ever were in need, you might say, or in perspective of taking the School of the Master Illumination Program. They don't know. When you have a spiritual healing, you never remember that you had been ill before. The doctors and the hospitals don't remember that you ever were ill. Your mother never remembers that you had been ill. Your parents, family, friends, no one ever knows you'd ever been ill. You see, because when you have gone out, that's why Jesus told the blind men, go and tell no one. Now, why was the story the blind men's story? Why wasn't the story about the sighted men's story? You see, the story should have been the sighted men's story. Jesus spoke to these blind people and said, you are now whole and perfect. You can see beautifully. And so they had their sight. And they went out and lived with their sight in perfect order. Now, where are you? Where am I on that level of sightedness? Where are we? Are we the three blind men? Or are we the three sighted men? Who are we? Are we the resurrected ones? Or are we the ones who would like to be resurrected? Are we the illumined ones? Or the ones who would like to be illumined? You see, in studying for the School of the Master, it is almost an impossible course. Well, it is an impossible course for a human being to take. Because if you are more human than divine in your desire for yourself, you understood what I said. If you're more human than divine in your desire for yourself, then you won't be able to play the simple games that I gave you to play. Now, the game, one of them was that you were the only person on campus with me. And I don't believe any one of you were able to pass that particular test. And you were there to only see the beauty and the goodness in each other, who was not there, and you couldn't do that. You were told not to judge me. And I did things in front of you to make you irritated, to make you angry, to make you feel terrible. I took away your toys. I took away your special projects and made you feel terrible about it. Some of you recognized that this was just a test, and you were fortified by it. Others of you didn't recognize that, and you were angry as hell at me. You wanted to kill me, and would have easily done it. I gave you all the opportunity to stand for a period of time, and you didn't know the period of time, which is what it has to be. And some of you made it, and some of you didn't. Now, all of you had the equal strength to make it, but you didn't do it because of what? Because you would not face the fact that you can do it and that I would never test you beyond your limits. So you see, when you're dealing with training yourself in being a resurrected being, what you're doing is you're training yourself to release all of the requirements you have of yourself that say, I own this, this is my shirt, these are my pants, my shoes, and you couldn't do what I asked you to do. You couldn't do it. And because you couldn't do it, you weren't able to make that easy step. Now, there were four boys in Neverland. There are four boys. Only one boy entered into Neverland. One. And he was the doubter. He was the one who was the troublemaker. But he was the most intense. And so, because of his intensity, when he saw the light, he was able to respond to it instantly and totally. You know? So, when we see the light and we can respond to it instantly and totally, we have the resurrection. We have the illumination. We have the allness. But you can't have it if you don't want to play the game. Now, the little fellow didn't want to play the game. You are a terrible tiger and pirate, and your name is Mr. Terrible. And he says, my name is Peter. Why? Because that's my name and I like it. All right. And as he was lying under the bench, I had Michael playing the game. And he says, the terrible prince has put me here. And so later, he said to the person under the bench, Michael, he said, why is it they do that to you? He said, because they're my bigger brothers and they think they can do it. And so he thought, you're right. They are your brothers and they can do that. Now, what was he saying when he said that? Was he saying that there was no chance for him to have a good relationship with his brothers? Or was he saying, this is the code of family brotherhood, that they do dumb things together, but they stand up as one to the world. And they did. They did. They did that very beautifully. But you see, Peter was able to enter into Neverland because he totally was it. He totally was it. He totally emotionally moved into that because he had a motivation, which was to see his mother. Now, did his mother do special, wonderful things with him? We were shown that she did. She respected him in his innocence. She respected him in his genius. She respected him in his integrity. She respected him in his ability to write. She respected him in the ability to draw his brothers to him to put on a plane, to do something together. She respected all of that. And she respected him when he tore apart the book and threw it away. She respected him because she loved him. But she not only loved him, she saw beyond whatever she did to how this was going to affect his entire life. And believe it, it affected his entire life. He undoubtedly grew to be one of the fine writers of his time. Now, you have the opportunity to be into this resurrection yourself. We're going to be talking a great deal more about it and sharing a lot more ideas about it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But you have the opportunity of being in this resurrection if you want to. Now, if you want to be in this resurrection, what it means is that you give yourself 100% to what we're talking about these next couple of days without judging. If you're going to judge how I present things, whether I present them in a skillful way, whether they're important or not. You see, as James, the author, was presenting his stuff to people, they had no idea what the full picture was, did they? They could not know how the show was. And his mentor, the man who provided the money for it, had no idea why he wanted 25 seats. In his heart, he knew that if he had an angel on each seat, that angel would ignite the fire in the hearts of all the adults around them, which it did. Their innocence at looking at the place, their joy and their magic, and being orphans made it even better, because they were very much in need of love. They were very much in need of someone who would play the game with them on their level. And then this theater, this presentation, was a game totally on their level. Totally on their level of awareness and of receptivity. Now, I'm going to continue to be working with you on your level of awareness and receptivity, but it's going to be up to you now whether you're going to be the child of innocence and to watch the show with your innocence and gain the great joy that it has to present to you, or whether you're going to be the sophisticated intellectual that you are and listen to what I'm saying and say, that is incorrect intellectually, that is incorrect for whatever reason. You have that opportunity. And I give you lots of opportunities to do that. But I have told you many times, this is a school. And we are in a school here in the monastery. We are in the school not for specific hours of the day. We are in the school 24 hours a day. And everything that I say to you is significant. You say, well, Herb, you think you're quite a person. You think you're pretty good. You think you're pretty wonderful. You think that, you know, you've really got something to offer to us. And, you know, really, we've got a lot to offer ourselves. You know, I don't know what you think. You've got so much to offer. And, of course, that's a right thing for you to think, as long as you're human. If you're looking, I mean, surely the disciples going with Jesus didn't find him to be illuminating all the time. As they talked to Jesus and they said, I want to sit on your right hand in the throne of God, and I want to sit on your left hand, you know, the two brothers. And, you know, what a bunch of nonsense. But it's okay. And what did he say? What did he say to them? You don't even know. What he said to them, you know?
There's no right or left.
There is no right or left. We're all one. Now, you see, the blacks love spirituals, Negro spirituals. They love these nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Glory, hallelujah. I got shoes, you got shoes, all got shoes, got shoes. When I get to heaven, gonna wear my gold shoes, wear them all over God's heaven, heaven. Gonna wear them all over God's heaven. And the blacks love it, the whites love it, everybody loves it. because it has rhythm to it, it has imagination to it, it has excitement to it. And it is totally, totally, totally illogical. But it is good. It is very good. It is what kept the Catholic Church successful all these years. It's not that it's logical, but it is sensitive and good. No. This is where I want you to be, not necessarily believing something that, because I tell you, although that would be a smart idea, but believe things because they're being told to you to open the channel of belief in yourself. When Peter believed that he could see his mother, he saw her. There's no logic to that. She was not standing there. She had been buried in the ground. She was not there. But she was there. You, if I can encourage you to be an Illuminati, if I can encourage you to look through your spiritual eyes at the divine in you and in everyone else, then I will have performed absolute magic. But what wonderful magic. What wonderful magic. But it's the magic that will open your hearts and your minds in ways that you could never imagine. And you say, well, Herb, when are you going to start doing that? Well, we'll start tomorrow. But I'm sort of preparing you along the way now, because I don't want you to say to me after I got started on this, well, Herb, you're talking idiot stuff. You're talking stupid. You're talking dumb. You're talking like a lunatic. And that's true. I will be talking like a lunatic. I'll be talking stupid and dumb. But I will be saying things to you that will touch your heart. And again, if you're unpossessed by it, if you're untouched by it, if you can listen and see through what I'm saying, that I'm trying to pull your chain unsuccessfully, I might hope, I might desire, but unsuccessfully, then as these next few days progress, we move into an awareness of our beauty, our magic, our wonder, our joy, our glory of who we are. Now, that's a very wonderful thing to do. And it's a very exciting thing to do. And I see that there is no activity going on here. So that tells us something, doesn't it? Here it's going on happily. So our original story is here intact, going on just beautifully. And over here, we're not doing so much. But that's lovely. That tells us something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know why it isn't going on?
No.
Because I never started it. How about that?
Well,
that's on here, too.
It still goes out.
What's that?
It still goes out.
Oh, yes. Yes, we'll put it on there now. But you see, these are things I got so excited in sharing this concept with you this hour that I neglected to turn on the computer recorder, yeah. So, you have something to think about. So, have a lovely dinner and think beautiful thoughts and be ready for another step on your illuminating journey tomorrow, which we have entitled, what have we entitled it? 6:30, 7:30, number five.
The resurrection
is now, as I awaken to now, I am resurrected, ascended. Life is known in the now instant. So that's what our theme will be as we start out tomorrow morning. So I look forward to each one of you being here, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and ready for an exciting adventure together.
Thank you.
I love you.